everyone, and welcome back to Uncovering Hamilton. Today is a very exciting day because I'm back and I'll be talking to you guys about three of my favorite songs from the entire musical: Right Hand Man, A Winter's Ball, and Hopeless. So let's dive right in and we'll get started with Right Hand Man. So in Right Hand Man, we basically start to see the fighting of the Revolutionary War taking place. And as we are introduced to George Washington, we also start to see the relationship between George Washington and Hamilton himself. So the first line is, "British Admiral Howe's got troops on the water, 32,000 troops in New York Harbor." British Naval Officer Richard Howe, 1st Earl of Howe, was basically vigorously prosecuting the entire New York City coastline in the invasion of Long Island. And that's basically what this line is talking about. And then the ensemble goes on to whisper many, many times, 32,000 troops in New York Harbor, really just accentuating how many troops that was and how hard it was going to be for the colonists to really fight that. And then Hamilton comes in and he says, "As a kid in the Caribbean, I wished for a war. I knew that I was poor. I knew it was the only way to rise up. If they tell my story, I am either going to die on the battlefield in glory or rise up. I will fight for this land, but there's only one man who can give us a command." So let's start with the first part of that lyric first. We basically see a younger, happier Hamilton who basically wished there was a war, and we might be wondering why. And I would answer that by kind of redirecting us to what we saw of Hamilton in the song Aaron Burser. Lin-Manuel Miranda likely is mentioning in this section a letter that Hamilton wrote to a childhood friend in 1769. He said, "I'm confident, Ned, that my youth excludes me from any hopes of immediate preferment, nor do I desire it, but I mean to prepare the way for futurity. I shall conclude saying I wish there was a war." And basically what we're saying is that in the 1700s, one's social status, financial bracket, political authority were all what you got from your parents. And it was really hard to rise up, as Hamilton says, or to really make a living for yourself that was independent of kind of what your family came from. And for people of humble birth like Hamilton, one of the only opportunities to become upwardly mobile was to distinguish themselves during times of war, revolution, upheaval. And these were all times when the gaps between social classes were really blurred in favor of military and intellectual meritocracy. And that's why Hamilton wishes for a war, even in these more jaded years. So we continue on, and Hamilton says, "But there's only one man who can give us a command." And that is going to be referring to George Washington. Now, just to give you some context about Hamilton and Washington's relationship, after the Revolution, Washington and Hamilton's alliance will continue as they lead the Federalist Party together and later serve together in government. And in fact, Hamilton will actually be Washington's Secretary of the Treasury. But really in this song, we just see the beginnings of their relationship, and we're also going to see how revered and respected Washington is by Hamilton, but also by all the other soldiers. Now, Burr comes in, and he calls George Washington the pride of Mount Vernon. Now, I really just point out this line because for those of us living in Westchester, we're like, wait, what? Is that referring to Westchester, Mount Vernon? but it's really not. Here, Mount Vernon refers to a location 13 miles away from Washington, D.C., where Washington was living at the time. Also, Washington did have 123 slaves at Mount Vernon. So even if Mount Vernon was located in Westchester, unfortunately, there's not much to be proud of there. Now, I mentioned before that really, it was going to be so difficult for the colonists to fight with the British because they did have 32,000 troops in New York Harbor. And we see this more in the next few lines, where Washington says, "We're outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, outplanned. We got to make an all-out stand. I'm going to need a right-hand man. I really like these recurring lines, which we'll hear again throughout the song. And the reason why I like them a lot is actually two reasons. The first is I think it really brings out the reality of war. A lot of the times, I think especially in colonial times and throughout history, it can become glorified. But what we hear in this line is basically how the revolution was so not an easy feat. And the colonists were definitely the underdogs going into this. And really Washington himself, who is always seen as this very heroic figure who led us to victory, even he is willing to admit right now, this is a crazy thing that the colonists are doing, and it's really not going to be anything easy at all. Another reason why I like these lines is if you listen to the song itself, they are very filled with punch and they have a clear beat to them, and Washington is like shouting these lines, and it almost makes you feel as though you're in the war itself and you're really experiencing this with all of the other cast members on stage. So I really like that it brings out the energy and the frenzy of the war in addition to the realities and the harshness of the war. A little later in the song, Hamilton has these interesting lines. He says, "Let's take a stand with the stamina God has granted us. Hamilton won't abandon ship. Yo, let's steal their cannons." And you might be wondering what's going on in those lines. And there actually is really interesting historical context to those lines. Basically, Hamilton, Hercules Mulligan, and around 100 of their friends stole 21 of the 24 cannons on Manhattan's southern tip, and they dragged them up to City Hall Park, which was a distance of just under a mile. And the entire time, British troops were on boats just offshore firing at them. And Lin-Manuel Miranda really simplifies the historical chronology here. Actually, Hamilton and Mulligan stole the British cannons in August of 1775, not during the Battle of Brooklyn in 1776. Hamilton and his artillery company saw a battle at the tail end of the British... But nevertheless, I think it's interesting that there is this historical reference, despite the difference in chronology. And I do think it's interesting that Hamilton and Mulligan really had the audacity to do this. And again, it really speaks especially to Hamilton's personality, because he was not some sort of general or colonel. He did not have a highly ranked position in the Revolutionary War. And yet he really took what Washington would call an all-out stand. He did everything he could to defeat the British, and he not only followed the orders of his commander, but he also had initiative and did things on his own that he felt could help. And while this actually ended up becoming a bit problematic for him, and he'll have issues with Washington over this, it really does speak to his personality and to how ambitious and determined he was. Now, we come back to the scene, the main scene of the battle, that is, and we're going to see Washington kind of talking about the state of the colonists' armies and troops. But first, to give a little bit of context, you might be guessing from the title of the song, Right Hand Man, that refers to Hamilton, and it does. Hamilton will, by the end of the song, become Washington's right hand man. But in this section that I'm going to read to you now, where Washington describes the state of his troops, we see a bit of a foreshadow where Washington says, "Oh, I need some sort of help. I need someone to be here with me, doing this with me." So when you hear those lines, you'll know that is referring to Hamilton and the role that Hamilton will fill by the end of the song. So Washington says, "We gotta run to Harlem quick. We can't afford another slip. Guns and horses giddy up, I decide to divvy up. My forces, they're skittish as the British cut the city up. This close to giving up, facing mad scrutiny. I scream in the face of this mass mutiny. Are these the men with which I am to defend America? We ride at midnight, Manhattan in the distance. I cannot be everywhere at once. People, I'm in need of dire assistance. Now, a short while later, Washington calls Hamilton into his office and basically asks, will you help out? Will you be a secretary for Nathaniel Greene and Henry Knox? And Hamilton says, be their secretary? I don't think so. Washington says, why are you upset? And Hamilton says, I'm not. And what we see here is Hamilton knew the value of being a scholar, but he was just absolutely disgusted by the idea of being a secretary. As he wrote to Washington after the war, when in the year 1777 the regiments of artillery were multiplied, I had good reason to expect that the command of one of them would have fallen to me had I not changed my situation, and this in all probability would have led further. Washington now continues trying to explain and reason with Hamilton, and he says, it's all right, you want to fight, you've got a hunger, I was just like you when I was younger. Head full of fantasies, of dying like a martyr. And then he says, dying is easy, young man, living is harder. This is probably one of the most famous lines from Hamilton, and while I could try to explain it, I think that Lin-Manuel Miranda himself explains it best. When I was doing my research on Washington to write his, I realized he wasn't unlike Hamilton. He, too, was reckless as youth. He basically triggered the French and Indian War in the 1750s, and he learned through experience not to be rash and not to be reckless. He had the same martyrdom fantasies that anyone in war harbors. This isn't unique to soldiers. It's unique to anyone who grows up worshiping Brandon Lee or Kurt Cobain or John Belushi or the 27 Club. Like, oh, I'm going to go out and be glorious and die young. That's what Washington was saying. There's no glory there. There's glory in living and actually doing the things you want to do. Now, Hamilton ends up accepting a position as Washington's right-hand man. And he says, you need all the help you can get. I have some friends, Lawrence, Mulligan, Marquis de Lafayette. Okay, what else? And we can really see Hamilton getting excited about this position, getting excited about getting involved in the war. And especially if you listen to the song, there's rising voices, rising tension. There are chord progressions that are really building on one another. And the rap is getting faster, more intense. And it's really just this awesome scene where we get to see Hamilton again in all of his fury and excitement and determination. And then for the rest of the song, there's a lot of Washington and the company singing, we are outnumbered, outplanned, outmanned, outgunned. And then the final line is the company saying, here comes the general and his right-hand man. And it basically ends just like that. And it's up to us to really realize that that right-hand man is Hamilton, which is so cool to see the progression in Washington and Hamilton's relationship from the beginning of this song to the end of this song. And keep in mind that at the beginning of the song, Hamilton was just another soldier. He was stealing cannons with Mulligan, and now he has this amazing platform through which he can really make more of a difference, which is all that he wants. Now, the next song, A Winter's Ball, is really very short. The actual song itself is just over a minute, so I'll quickly give a summary of A Winter's Ball, and then we can dive right into Helpless. So, A Winter's Ball is basically narrated by Aaron Burr, and it sets the scene of this nice party where all of the colonists are kind of gathered. And it basically introduces the idea that Aaron Burr and Hamilton are similar in another way, in addition to kind of the things that we talked about in the previous episodes where we covered Aaron Burser. And the way that they're similar is they're both reliable with the ladies. And Burr actually says, "There are so many to deflower, ladies, looks, proximity to power, ladies." And again, this shows kind of the idea that marrying into a wealthier family was one of those few ways to up your social status, in addition to kind of what I mentioned before with becoming a war hero. And then at the end of the song, basically, we're introduced to the Schuyler sisters, of which there are three. And Burr says there's this winter's ball, and the Schuyler sisters are the envy of all. And he asks Hamilton, "Yo, if you can marry a sister, you're rich, son." And Hamilton says, "Is it a question of if, Burr, or which one?" Again, kind of showing Hamilton's confidence in himself and in his ability to attract not one, but all of the Schuyler sisters. And with that, let's move on to Helpless. I love Helpless because I love any song that has to do with the Schuyler sisters. And really, I think that's undisputable. I love the Schuyler sisters. They are such icons. And you probably remember them from the Schuyler sisters when they were in New York City and saying, look around at how lucky we are to be alive right now. And in Helpless, we'll start to see their interactions with Hamilton and how they become part of his story. And so at the beginning of the song, we meet Eliza Schuyler again. If you remember, she is the second Schuyler sister. And she says, "I have never been the type to try and grab the spotlight. We," as in her and her friends, "were at a revel with some rebels on a hot night. Laughing at my sister as she's dazzling the room. Then you walked in and my heart went boom." And she is referring to Hamilton there. But what's interesting in this line also is that during Hamilton's experiences in the war, booms were most often attributed to violent echoes of cannons and gunfire. And yet here we see him causing an explosion on a vastly different landscape, Eliza's heart. And then we get the amazing chorus of the song where Eliza is basically saying, when she looks into Hamilton's eyes, she's helpless and she knows she's down for the count and she's drowning in him. And then we get this narration, this kind of story of how Hamilton and Eliza first meet each other after she kind of looks into his eyes for that very first time. And basically what happens is Hamilton meets Angelica Schuyler first, but Angelica says, "I'm about to change your life." And she leads him to Eliza Schuyler. And Eliza says, "It's a pleasure to meet you." And Hamilton says, "Schuyler." And Angelica clarifies, saying, "Oh, Eliza is my sister." And what's interesting there is the fact that Hamilton even asked Schuyler. And it really makes me think that it really was just so important who you married and their social status at the time. That was just always something that was part of the conversation. And for Hamilton, marrying a Schuyler would really increase his social status. The Schuylers were well off. Their father was a politician. He was in a Senate position for New York. Whereas obviously we know Hamilton was really not well off. He was young, scrappy, and hungry. So the fact that he asked, "Are you a Schuyler?" is really telling as well. Now, we flash forward to a week later, and Eliza says, "I'm writing a letter nightly. Now, my life gets better. Every letter that you write me." And Angelica really just drops in and says, "I'm just saying, if you really loved me, you would share him." And this is a really funny, but it does turn sad later. What we see as of this song, though, is basically something that can be summarized in a letter that Angelica sent to Eliza, where she told her that she, too, loves Hamilton very much. And if Eliza were as generous as the old Romans, she would lend him to Angelica for a little while. So basically what we're seeing here is a sort of love triangle where both of these Schuyler sisters are in love with Hamilton. And obviously Eliza is the one who's moving forth with a relationship with Hamilton. But this tension will not be quick to go away. We'll hear more about it in the next song from Angelica's perspective, but it is something to keep in mind. Was a little bit of a heartbreaking moment for Angelica, and something that didn't necessarily tear the sisters apart, because they would stay close for the rest of their lives. But it was something that did kind of cause a little bit of pain in that moment. Plus, I do like to mention that just because I really do see Hamilton's entire life as political and historical gossip and drama. And this is just one of many, many examples that we'll see in his life where he has like a scandal or like some sort of drama going on. So it does add to the entertainment of his entire story. And then we flash forward 2 weeks later, and Eliza says, "I'm in the living room stressin'. My father's stone-faced while you're asking for his blessin'. I'm dying inside as you wine and dine, and I'm trying not to cry because there's nothing that your mind can't do. My father makes his way across the room to you. I panic for a second, thinking we're through. But then he shakes your hand and says, 'Be true.' And you turn back at me and smile." And what we see there is basically Hamilton asked Eliza's father for his blessing for Eliza's hand in marriage, and he says yes. And in the next song, we will get to experience their wedding. A little later, though, Hamilton is talking with Eliza, and he's very frank about his social status and the differences between him and Eliza in their upbringing. Hamilton says, "Eliza, I don't have a dollar to my name, an acre of land, a troop to command, a dollop of fame. All I have's my honor, a tolerance for pain, a couple of college credits, and my top-notch brain." I do want to point out one line in that section, which is the first one where Hamilton says, "I don't have a dollar to my name." This is pretty humorous, because while Hamilton is being painfully aware of the fact that he was a poor man marrying into a wealthy family, it's almost ironic because today Hamilton has his face on the $10 bill, and it's like, ha, he may not have a dollar to his name, but soon the $10 bill will have his name all over it. As Helpless comes to an end, we finish off with the wedding march playing in the background, and all the women on stage gather around and they say, "In New York, you can be a new man. In New York, you can be a new man. In New York, you can be a new man." And Eliza says, "Helpless." And while we'll get to the wedding more in the next episode, I do want to leave you kind of thinking about the mood that this song sets. Obviously, we see Hamilton and Eliza's love as this beautiful thing. Eliza has a beautiful voice, and she's played by Philippa Sue in the original cast. So if you listen to the music, it's very upbeat. It's very almost cutesy. It's very energetic. And they do have this young love. But as we'll see in the next episode, it wasn't all just happiness and puppies and rainbows. As I mentioned earlier, there was that little bit of tension that existed with Angelica also having interest in Hamilton. So we'll be able to actually see the wedding from Angelica's perspective in that next episode. That being said, I think it was such a creative move by Lin-Manuel Miranda to show Hamilton and Eliza's relationship first from Eliza's perspective, then separately from Angelica's perspective. I just think showing it from two different lenses provides so much more depth into what existed in this love triangle and in these relationships. And I think that it brings us all the more close to all of the characters all around, Eliza, Hamilton, Angelica. So I'm excited to talk to you guys about Angelica's perspective in the next episode. In the meantime, I would highly encourage you guys to listen to the songs that we discussed today on your own time. They are amazing songs, some of my favorites in this entire musical. And yeah, that's about it. I can't wait to see you guys next time.